Welcome to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host, and we're a group of law enforcement professionals to talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. And let me introduce the crew. Guys, if you don't mind waving for the video portion of our show, Travis Yates, Dr. Travis Yates at travisyates.org. He wrote a book you guys might have heard about, The Courageous Police Leader. He travels the country actually trying to get more courageous police leaders for us, and he's very engaging in a seminar. So, you know, it's almost worth it just going to travisyates.org just to watch the cool videos, because, you know, it's like going to a pep rally. You know, you're like energized, you know, without drinking an energy drink. It's pretty cool. So I don't even know. I'm drinking an energy drink and I have Travis on the show today. I don't even know what's going to happen, but I may not be able to make it through. Who knows? Then we got Jeff Weninger, retired LAPD commander, retired as a lieutenant, and he also is the author of On Thin Ice, and that is at onthinicebook.com or also jeffweninger.com. And the book is coming out for release soon. He's got some special stuff going on. We're going to be talking about in 1 second, but welcome to the show, Jeff. Also, a shout out to our sponsors, our title sponsor, Gauls at Gauls.com, ComplyTechnologies.com, our satellite sponsor, Arrow Precision USA, our arm sponsor, gunlearn.com, bluethegold.com, on medicare.live, Safeguard Recruiting, our streaming sponsor, and yes, we're streaming the 1.5 million followers right now, twobells.com. They built their new online store at leoroundtable.com. We will be doing a Two Bells giveaway today, and fishorlandobass.com. They've got a fishing charter, guys. It's excellent. All you have to do when you're going to Orlando, drop the wife and the kids off, and do the fishing charter with Zach at fishorlandobass.com. And if you're feeling a little frisky, do the alligator hunting. You'll catch and release alligators. It's pretty cool. Also, a shout out to Brian Burns for the Tampa Free Press at tampafp.com. Thanks for carrying the contract, Brian. Also, Ray Diedrich, former lawman.com and lawofficer.com. Thanks to all these entities for helping make this show happen. And now, what in the world are we talking about today? Here we go, guys. This is still in the news. Dude, guys, this is controversial. The SIG P320, gun maker sues Washington's Police Academy over the P320 pistol ban. My agency, Tampa, is in the process, from what I understand, of doing the same thing. Are they going to get sued by SIG? We're going to be talking about that. Also, armed robbery suspect fatally shot by LAPD officers when he points the gun at the officers. This is a confusing video to watch. When you read the details under the video, what happened, and then I go to my show notes and what really happened, it's just like two totally different stories. It's amazing. Jeff, you're from LAPD. I can't wait to get your take on this. And then we got body cam shows Alberta. It is a Royal Canadian Mounted Police. This guy's being dragged by a car. It's a stolen vehicle when he tries to stop the driver that's inside of it. Then we got police chief's three-year-old ends up unfortunately being killed by a canine that he actually was keeping at his house. And I think it came from another agency, the canine. Sad story. We haven't had time to get to that one yet. Then we got a bad guy fatally shot by Antioch police when he charges at them with a knife, and then Orange County deputies fatally shoot a guy that's armed with a knife. So we got, you know, quite a few knife things going on here. So if you guys are ready, let's go in and start off with the first one, and let's jump in the SIG. Now, let me give credit to the sources first. Kyro, that's KIRO7.com, and also outdoorlife.com. So the first one is this gun maker sues Washington's Police Academy over the P320 pistol ban. And then the second article, which is at Outdoor Life, it is an FBI examination from the FBI lab on the Sig Sauer M18 evaluation. Now, the M18, from what I understand and from what I've read, it's the 320 that has been made for the military, but they've issued it out to, in this case, in Michigan. But they did some examinations of the gun. And so we'll get more to that in a second. I mean, there was actually an examination of the gun after a misfire. But let me just start off by saying that SIG is, if I could only carry one gun, it would be my SIG P226. It's an amazing gun. It's a 9mm. It's shoots in semi auto and it's a semi-automatic, but I mean it shoots in single action, double action is what I was trying to say. But it's my sweetest shooting gun. That said, the 320 has been in the news for a little bit now. Gun maker Sig Sauer, they're taking the Washington State Police Academy to court over officials banning its SIG P320 pistol over safety concerns. So they're suing them. Washington State Criminal Justice Training Commission, they banned the pistol after investigating growing claims that the firearm has troubled history in firing without pulling the trigger. I have seen videos. I've seen, there was one where an officer, if my memory's correct on this, was even in an elevator and the gun discharged and they're just there. It goes on to say the SIG is actually headquartered in New Hampshire, which I did not realize, but they're suing Washington's Academy to reverse the ban. It claims that it's unnecessary. It's not well grounded in fact or in law. And it also wants to block the executive director of the training commission from making public statements about the pistol outside the scope of her duties. And so it's kind of like the libel slander thing. Law enforcement, here's a quote, law enforcement departments throughout Washington state, they trust, rely on, and prefer the P320, this is obviously being made by SIG, as their service pistol of choice. And the lawsuit is saying this. Also, by banning the P320 for new law enforcement recruits, the WSC, JTC, the Academy, they're putting these men and women at a disadvantage when they enter the field, and they will be assigned the P320. The action also imposes negative financial impacts on all those law enforcement agencies that utilize that pistol and SIG Sauer. It further inappropriately and justifiably inflicts reputational and economic harms on SIG. And now we go to the Michigan State, the M18 evaluation. But I will say that this... this case, you know, where they're suing the state of Washington, they highlight an instance, a Houston officer, Rick Fernandez, he's suing SIG for $10 million because he was shot in the leg by his holstered gun. And then we've got this thing that happened in Michigan where the FBI gets involved and they grab a pistol after it fires. And an officer, you know, in Michigan, they seize the pistol and they do all kinds of examinations. And it looks like, from what I'm reading, the conclusion is that there's an issue with the striker safety lock, and that they want to do further examination, but they say it looks like it's possible there may be some kind of an issue that needs to be looked at further. But of course, we've seen the videos. We've heard this going on for a while. My agency, like I mentioned, is also looking at dropping the 320. I've heard great things about the SIG 365, which I'm actually looking at getting myself. So I've kind of set the stage for what we're talking about. And there's two sides to the argument, but SIG is not backing down. They're fighting these lawsuits. They're not, you know, doing away with the 320, the platform or anything. They're still pushing it. And agencies are still getting it, but they're also, you know, walking away from it too. Any commentary on this, guys, or any inside knowledge on this? And we don't have to talk about it.
Well, I admittedly have not kept up with the story. I love my 365. I don't have a 320.
You have a 365.
Yeah, it's great. I think I have a couple of them. Wow. So it's just interesting. SIG sort of thrown down the gauntlet, right? Of course, they're concerned that that's going to bleed into the sales of other weapons as well. And I have to imagine this is a very, very popular gun. I don't know the numbers on it, but this has obviously created quite a thunderstorm across departments across the nation. So it's going to be interesting to see how this turns out.
No, I agree. I mean, personally, like I said, SIG is my favorite gun, P226. And I really want to get a 365. If I only know someone that had an extra one, you know.
You never have extra guns, so I don't have any extra.
Well, that is true. I so wish. I love SIG. I love the name. I would welcome them as a sponsor. I mean, I really believe in SIG, but part of me wishes they would walk away from the 320. M18, just drop it. It's just not worth it. You're not going to get a lot of egg in your face.
I'll go on the record right now, and I'll take a free one from it if they want to send a 320 just directly to me. I'll be glad to have one.
You'll be glad. Okay. All right.
And again, you know, it's a lot different for me to have one than to be carrying it in a holster all day every day. And so, like I said, it's a very interesting. I don't remember a story like this in my career, except for the occasional, you know, complaints about Glock that were never really that valid, about Glocks just magically going off, right? So we heard that once in a while, and that was never really validated. But I don't recall a story like this in many, many years, so it's going to be interesting to see how it turns out.
Yeah. Jeff Weininger.
Yeah, you know, it seems to me that there's probably some validity to the concerns, and this is a marketing nightmare for the company. But I would think by filing this lawsuit, I'm kind of like Travis. I really haven't been keeping up with this. But now that they file this lawsuit, it becomes media attention. And you're probably going to have a broader scope of people that are now going to be aware of this and perhaps be hesitant to buy any model of gun from that company. So I'm not sure how wise it was for them to file a lawsuit. You know, the LAPD, they have a list of guns that you are authorized to purchase and carry. And to say that you can't remove our gun from your list or we're going to sue you, it seems a little ridiculous. I can understand how they would want to perhaps mute you relative to your rationale why, but I just not sure how wise they were in filing this thing.
So anyhow, I wish they would drop it. Drop that line, keep the other line going, concentrate on the 365. But anyhow, we will keep watching this and see what happens. But I agree. It's in the news now, and that's not where you wanted to be. Commercial break, guys. Stick with us. We'll be right back. All right, guys. You know, as police officers, you know, we get our gear from a lot of different places. And then when you throw the online option into it, the choices are what? Almost limitless, right? But I want to remind everybody here about the importance of supporting the companies that actually support law enforcement. And I don't know of a company that does that better than Gauls at Gauls.com. Even their motto is proud to serve those who serve, which, of course, they do in spectacular fashion. And they walk the talk by supporting dozens of focused organizations like this radio show. So when you're looking for gear, please support our title sponsor by going to Gauls at Gauls.com. And they have gift cards. We give away a couple every week on the show. Hook up your family, friends, and loved ones with a new Gauls gift card, and they'll be your new best friends. It's really amazing. They pretty much have everything but Gauls, but guns and ammo at Gauls. And, you know, I just ordered, they got boots. Guys, I just ordered a beautiful pair of boots. They're waterproof. They're from Danner, but Gauls carries them. And I didn't even have to pay full price. They had a great sale going on, and I got the boots quick. So go to Gauls.com to make that happen. Now it's time to talk about Comply Technologies at ComplyTechnologies.com. And they are committed to providing, and this is non-lethal solutions, and it's a credible opportunity. So if you go to, and again, that is Comply Technologies at ComplyTechnologies.com, they provide non-lethal solutions to help officers gain the upper hand safely and rapidly in a humane, low-ethics manner. Now, they call this CD3. It stands for Conductive Distraction and De-escalation Technology. It's kind of a cool name, and their flagship product, we all know by now, it's called the Glove. It's helped officers tens of thousands of times with no injuries, and yes, you heard that correctly, it said no injuries. The Glove has actually achieved non-lethal status in an arena where other guys can only offer less lethal results, and when it comes to weapons retention, they have virtually eliminated weapons confusion. So stay ahead of the game with Comply Technologies and the revolutionary CD3 that hundreds of agencies have already turned to nationwide. And friends, take it from me, when it comes to safety, this is one of the most common sense, hands-on solutions has ever come along. Go to ComplyTechnologies.com today and tell them that Chip sent you. Again, that is ComplyTechnologies.com. Welcome back to Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com. And is there any more commentary on the whole 6 hour and P320 or M18 situation, or are you guys ready to go on? And I'm thinking it's probably a good time if you guys are ready to move on. You know, we need an update from Jeff Weninger on Thin Ice, that book that's coming out. He's got some special stuff going on that involves Leo Roundtable, which we appreciate. So, Jeff, the floor is yours.
Yeah, well, what I do is I encourage your listeners to go to onthinicebook.com. and enter their email. And when they do that, they'll automatically be eligible to win the VIP swag box, which will be a signed hard copy of the book. And it will also contain other gifts that are influenced by the book and the vision that I have. And you don't have to be a live listener. You can watch the show in delay. But once you're on and you sign in, you're eligible each week. And I select a winner, and I will announce that winner every Thursday on this show. So do yourself a favor and go ahead and get put on that list.
Hey guys, do me a favor, because when you get that swag box and everything in it, if you guys can send me a picture, because you know Jeff promised me one, I haven't seen it yet, and I would like to know what they look like and what's it. No, I know they're not gonna come out until the book comes out. I get it. I'm just having fun with you, Jeff. But yeah, that's exciting stuff. And so remember, no matter how you listen to the show, live or delayed, it doesn't matter. Go to onthinicebook.com and go in and sign up, guys. It's the best opportunity you're going to have for a long time. And do they know about how they stay in? Did you mention that you signed up one time and you stayed in the, okay. You did say that. Good deal. So guys, you can't lose. I mean, it's like you get re-entered constantly for every drawing. It's just great. So, all right. If you guys are ready for the next one, then we've got a story with a video component. So let's go ahead and jump over to that one. So This is the LAPD story. I can't wait to cover. We got just about 5 minutes, so I think it's going to be enough time. And I can't wait to hear what Jeff says about this, because I've really got a lot of questions. So Rumble.com, our favorite law enforcement video channel called This Is Butter, we have an armed robbery suspect, ends up being fatally shot by LAPD. And this is when he points a gun at the officers. But what they say goes down and what you're seeing on the video is like watching two different things. So this is what the article says. Hyde Park, California. So the Los Angeles Police Department, they're investigating a fatal officer-involved shooting. It occurred on July the 10th. It's the city's 77th Street Division, and following a confrontation with an armed suspect. Now, the incident took place about 6:20 in the evening, so it's pretty early in the evening. Uniform officers from the division's gang enforcement detail. Okay, so that's one flag for me. They see a guy, later identified as 63-year-old James Tulis. He exits a parked car while carrying a handgun. Now, that is true, but it's what happened before that time that really gets me going. But anyhow, Tulis, or guy that gets out of the car, he walks onto the sidewalk where he becomes involved in a physical altercation with another guy. And as the officers move in to intervene, they roll up in their cars. This guy allegedly fires one round from his weapon at the officer. He points his gun, he shoots at them, and then they light him up, right? And he falls to the ground, and he ends up dying. And that's pretty much where they leave it. They say that LAPD's Force Investigation Division, they later determined there was a confrontation, a verbal dispute, an altercation. No one else ended up being injured but our bad guy that was shot and killed. And they get implying it's a single semi-automatic handgun recovered at the scene, and they book it as evidence. But the video, if we watch the video, we clearly see that there are two guns. So when you start watching from my notes, you watch only 33 seconds in, you get it looks like a car pulled up behind our bad guy that gets shot and killed by the cops. He's off on the side of the road. A car pulls up behind him, and you got a black male driver, black male female passenger. They get out, they walk up, and they stay on the same side. So our black male driver walks up to our suspect who's behind the driver's wheel of his car that stopped. He's actually got at least two people in the back seat that we don't know about yet. The female walks up on the passenger side, and she's like trying, you know, they're both talking with the driver, you know, the guy on the driver's side is conversing with him. This female's agitated, and then she gets more agitated. And during this process, she takes a key, and she starts going down the side of his car, just keying the crap out of it, goes around the rear trunk, and she's still keying that sucker. And then the guy in the driver's seat behind the steering wheel, his windows, it's got to be open because there's a point to where he gets agitated while she's keying his car. You see him throw a punch at the guy that's on the outside of the car, the black male that's standing out there, and they punch back and forth. And then he opens up his car and he gets out. Now, at this time, you would have thought from watching a surveillance video without sound that maybe there were shots fired, because people start to like vamoose. You got a guy that opens up the rear passenger door of this parked car with the suspect in it, and he bails out. People start kind of like skirting and running away. The black male that was on the outside of our suspect's car, he walks around to the sidewalk, and our suspect gets out with a gun in his hand, and he walks out, and then he starts like fighting this guy, like kind of like pistol whipping a little bit. And then our cops roll up. And while our cops roll up, our suspect has a gun in his hand already, and he points it at the cops. They say that he fired, and then he gets lit up. There was one point before the cop showed up, there were the black male that walked up to the suspect. It looked like he reached in his waistband, pulled out something. I'm thinking it was probably a gun, but I couldn't be 100%. But while the shooting's going on, and while our suspect's on the ground, and the shooting thing's going on, you see bullets hitting the ground next to this black male that initially approached our suspect. He clearly has a gun in his hand, and he's pointing at the cops. He looks to me like he's pulling the trigger on it, but they make no mention of him going to jail, shooting him, grabbing the gun, or anything like that. And then at the very end, you see a guy crawling from the back seat. He crawls over into the driver's seat of the suspect's car. Suspect's dead. The one guy already bailed out of the back seat and left, and this guy drives the car away while the cops are cleaning up, you know, the shooting scene. We're at 38 seconds. We don't have much time. Jeff, you want to whet our appetite on this before we go to the commercial break?
Well, I'll just tell you this, that I'm very familiar with that area. The very first homicide scene I ever went to was right there at Hyde Park and Crenshaw. So that's rolling 60s ganghood.
All right. Well, I can't. I want to hear more. And I want to hear if the restaurants are any good around that side of town, too. But anyhow, we'll be right back. Commercial break. All right, guys. Introducing Aero Defense by Aero Precision at AeroPrecisionUSA.com, a beacon of durability, dependability, and all-American craftsmanship in the realm of duty rifles. And yes, we're talking about long guns. They're born from an aerospace engineering company, so you know these guys know what they're doing. And Aero Defense by Aero Precision demands perfection, because settling for anything less is not an option when your life is on the line. Visit AeroPrecisionUSA.com for a lineup that matches every discipline, because they basically have something for everybody. And, you know, back since 1994, they've been quietly leading the AR builder parts domain, but now they're making waves in the complete rifle arena with Solus bolt actions. And that's not all. Their M4 E1 Pro and their Mod 4 handguards, they hit AeroPrecisionUSA.com last year, the embodiments of duty rifle excellence, and they're now being tailored for the civilian customer, which means you guys can start getting your hands on this primo stuff. And their M5 AR-308 platform, nothing short of spectacular. So don't settle for less, but you can have the best. Head over to AeroPrecisionUSA.com. Again, that's AeroPrecisionUSA.com. Now, if you're struggling with the ins and outs of warrantless searches and seizures, or if you're worried about the liability in case you get it wrong, say hello to BlueTheGold.com. They translate search and seizure doctrines into clear, straightforward concepts that any officer can relate to. Plus, they give the training for free thanks to BlueTheGold.com's free weekly webinars. Now, coming up this week, Not Caught Red-Handed is on August the 27th, and you can sign up at BlueTheGold.com today. Join thousands of your peers in Blue and step up your legal game, because frankly, you and your agency cannot afford not to. BlueTheGold.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We're joined by Dr. Travis Yates and also Lieutenant Jeff Weninger. And guys, we just got done talking about LAPD story. And look, what I the details of the story that I read, and then what I got from my show notes, actually watching the video, two different things. And there was a fatal shooting. But we really had, in my opinion, we had two bad guys in this thing, and they really addressed one of the bad guys. And there was some other stuff going on they never even talked about. So Jeff Weninger, this used to be your neck of the woods, from what I understand, when you were with LAPD. I think you were with LAPD for what, 34 years, I think, or I know you were with two agencies, the Sheriff's Office and LAPD, and you got 34 years law enforcement experience, maybe 30 or 32 with LAPD. But tell us more.
Yeah, you know, I did just over 30 with LAPD. But my initial division of assignment was 77th Division. And then very familiar with that area. Crenshaw and Hyde Park, that's a rolling 60s gang hood neighborhood. And I suspect both these guys were associated with that gang, or perhaps were rival gang members. But not knowing what initiated their contact and the dispute that they were having, you know, the reality is, yes, we had two bad actors that were going against each other. But it's, you know, these are the type of stressful circumstances that, you know, you don't have the time to get a radio call, and you get the comments of the call, and you can discuss tactics and how best to approach and all that sort of stuff. This is, you see something and you have to respond, and it's tough. Here you had two guys each with guns, and they turned out both to be bad guys, but that isn't necessarily the case. And this could have been a carjacking of an innocent person, and you know, you have this type of interaction. So you got to really read the room real fast and figure out what's going on. Here it wasn't too hard, because this guy foolishly pointed a gun, and according to the information we've received, that he actually fired at the officers, and they responded appropriately. Now, that being said, I saw when the suspect was down that the 63-year-old gentleman that they apparently saw exit his car with the gun, so they were focused on him. When he was down after being hit by rounds fired by the officers, it looked like the other suspect drew his gun and may have actually fired into his body.
Oh, I thought he was shooting. I thought, to me, yeah. Look, I thought that he was shooting at the cops, but you think maybe he was shooting him in his body? Really? Oh, yeah, I didn't pick up on that.
I think he may have finished him off. So, and the one thing I got to commend these officers for, because there's just the two of them. And you just rolled into a rapidly unfolding tactical scenario where you have to make split second decisions. And there was a lot to process there. You had two vehicles that were involved and multiple people that were associated with each vehicle. You had the people that were in the vehicle where the gentleman that was shot and killed had just exited. There were other people in that vehicle where you had the passenger climb over and drive away. So he had to deal with that and get that broadcast out to responding units to detain that individual. And then you had the other vehicle. And it is odd that they only mentioned one gun was recovered, because I saw each of them in possession of a firearm. That being said, you know, there's all kinds of quick handoffs and things that are occurring when you only have two officers that are trying to process everything that's going on. So it's quite possible that that second gun of the individual that survived got handed off to somebody. You know, I think that the officers did a really good job considering how rapidly everything was unfolding. And I like the fact where they even communicated verbally, where they're like, you know, I've got this, I'll cover these guys that, you know, as far as people on the sidewalk, I'm going to get the broadcast out about the information in the vehicle and get that description out. And they were very poised in how they did it. So, I suspect they're fairly tenured officers, and this isn't their first time being in a stressful scenario.
Wow. Interesting. Travis Yates.
Yeah, Chip, I think we sometimes forget, as Jeff said, the rapidly evolving split-second decision-making law enforcement has to make, because we get a chance to watch this on video and we get to see it slow down and we get to think about it. The officers don't get to view it from that lens. And as Jeff said, and he's the one familiar with this area, but the 77th District is where my favorite rapper Nipsey Hussle was murdered on March 31st, 2019. And of course, the backdrop of that story is the street crimes unit. I don't think it was called street crimes unit, but that unit had made some incredible strides in that area with violent crime. But then, of course, the LA Times wrote a nasty article about how their stops had made disproportionality occur in the traffic stop data because they were actually impacted by violent crime. And the mayor pulled back that unit, eliminated that unit. And of course, my boy Nipsey was murdered just a month later. So, you know, now Nipsey was involved in some nefarious activities. I'm not exactly pleased about that, but there's many, many victims like Nipsey that, as we see in this video, police presence matters. And so I think it matters in areas such as that.
Hey, I got to ask you guys, or especially Jeff, is there any chance that these guys watch the video after the fact, after they cut the other guys loose? And they said, oh, crap, that other dude had a freaking gun, and he like pulled it out, and he looked like he was shooting, you know, and maybe they did. Because when I'm watching the body cams, I couldn't see that guy on the body cam. I don't even know if they, you know, they may or may not have seen the second guy with the gun. I don't know. Is there any chance of that maybe happened, or?
Yeah, with the LAPD, with the Force Investigation Division, the officers, they have a legal representative that comes out to the scene. And prior to their interviews, they are allowed to review what video they have.
So but I mean, can, this, but we from the body cam, I couldn't see the secondary guy with the gun, couldn't see it. It was the surveillance cam that we got, which I'm sure was only available days.
Yeah,
after
that would have been probably days later. Yeah. I mean, we probably would find it that afternoon. Perhaps, to be honest with you, they may have had it, because when you respond, you have an entire team of detectives and you divvy up the responsibilities. So really? You have people out there scouring and getting all of this video footage in real time while other things are happening. So by the time we sit down, you know, you have the shooting, it takes us about an hour to get there because we have an entire on-call team, and we get the call and I start notifying my team and then we start rolling. And usually my guys would get there before I do because I got to make a lot of notifications to actually the chief of police and my deputy chief and so on and so forth. So there's a lot going on by the time I would actually get there, and I'm in charge of the entire scene. So it is plausible that we would have that video when we're interviewing him 3, 4, 5 hours later.
Wow. That would be impressive. Yeah, that would be impressive. Yeah. Well, anything else, gentlemen, on this? You guys ready?
Just the one thing I would say about the video is it's really remarkable, because you will have guys that will remember things a certain way. And when they watch the video, they're absolutely flabbergasted. They're like, I know that's what I'm seeing occurred on the video, but no, I was over here. Yeah, in my mind, I was over here. Completely, you know, not accurate. And it's not that they're lying. Right. It's the way our brains work at times, you know, how we're able to process things.
My last 6 years at the union benefited me from seeing that so many times. These uses of force and stuff where guys are swearing. And then people are wanting to hang them out the dry for lying. And we have the benefit of being able to review video footage and, you know, where I'm at. And, man, I tell you, that's so beneficial because you're right. The mind is, it's a wonderful thing, but just sometimes you remember things completely different than the way it went down. I see Travis shaking his head.
Well, and that's one of the reasons we typically would tell officers to just kind of don't say much at the scene, you know, collect everything and get with your representation later. Because I would roll up on a scene. I typically remember one scene where an officer dumped a magazine into this old boy, and I get there and he's like, I shot two times. I'm like, hey, bro, just be quiet right now. don't say anything else because you're not in the right mindset to be regurgitating this information. So we typically would have these officers on the scene walk us through the scene in generic terms, but don't get real specific until after the fact. In fact, it takes about 48 to 72 hours for a lot of those memories to actually come back, which is, you know, we used to really mess up, you know, years ago, Chip, as both of you know, is we would take statements that night from officers. And then, of course, we'd find out 2 or 3 days later, oh, wait a minute, their story seems different. They must be lying. No, they're not lying. They're just remembering more accurate information. That's, as right. You said, that's how the brain operates.
You know, I'll tell you guys a story. When I was at Tampa, no secret, I went through a really nasty internal affairs investigation and a criminal investigation. And when I had a meeting with FDLE, and Brett couldn't go with me. And he had a grandmother that was sick. He had to take her to the hospital or to some clinic somewhere or something. So I went by myself. And when I came back, I told Brett exactly what had happened in the meeting and the conversations, who was there, everything, but in great detail. So a year or so later, when I have to go to internal affairs, and this meeting was crucial because the FDLE was lying about some stuff that happened in the meeting. They called Brett as a witness, and Brett told them everything that he remembered from the meeting that he thought he was at, and he wasn't. He wasn't even there. He wasn't even working that day, and IA didn't do their job. And so I went to my notes because I kept daily notes, and I read that Brett took off. So I went and I grabbed the vacation slip and his time and showed that he wasn't there and stuff. And I had to submit that to IA. They had my, and to tell them to discount everything that Brett said, because it didn't happen the way that he remembered it. It was, you know, cause he wasn't there, you know, the craziest stuff. So you're right. The mind plays some unbelievable tricks on us, guys. We're going to take our next commercial break. We'll be right back. All right, guys, you know, as law enforcement officers, we deal with guns every day, but it's what we don't know about them that gets us in the trouble. Injuries, civil lawsuits, accidental discharges, misidentifications, lost prosecutions, and also disciplinary issues. But gunlearn.com, they have your back. You can quickly become extremely firearm knowledgeable by simply learning 14 training modules from the convenience of your home or your office, or by attending a live seminar at gunlearn.com. You can also become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialist like our very own Captain Brett Bartlett and also attorney Ken Affianco. Now, the course has had huge success in raising the bar of firearm knowledge, and GunLearn has been a trusted source since way back in 2011 by gun manufacturers, federal agencies, forensic organizations, and police departments nationwide. Now, the founder is Dan O'Kelly, and if you have your own agency, he's got a deal for you. You can actually host a seminar for absolutely no cost. It's an amazing opportunity. You can go to gunlearn.com to get more information. And again, that is gunlearn.com. You'd be glad that you did. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We're joined by Dr. Travis Yates and also Lieutenant Jeff Winninger. And we've been talking about a LAPD story. Guys, any more commentary on that? You guys ready to move on to the next story with a video component, or you're ready? All right. I think it's time. So we're still at rumble.com, our favorite law enforcement video channel called This Is Better. And we have a body cam that shows Alberta. This is now the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. This officer is dragged while trying to stop a driver that's inside a stolen vehicle.
Got the keys. Get out of the truck. You're all under arrest now. Get the out on the ground. Get on the ground now. Hey! Get out of the truck! No! Get out! Let me go! Hey! Fuck! I got 40 now. He has a gun!
Oh, I don't have a gun!
What was that? Show me your hands! What the was that? Get on the ground now! Get on the ground!
I'm here.
You two stay in there.
Oh,
What do you have in your hands?
Nothing.
Where'd that thing go? What was that?
So again, we're in Canada, and the strategy and tactical maneuvers are a little bit different than here in the States. So Gibbons, Alberta. So a Morinville Royal Canadian Mounted Police officer, he ends up being dragged during a traffic stop for a stolen vehicle at a Shell gas station in Gibbons. Now, the agency said that while officers were on patrol, they had reason to run the license plate of a vehicle. And when the officer went to approach the vehicle and detain the occupants, the driver of the vehicle was able to start it, put it in drive, and then he starts driving away. And then he reverses and he traps the officer between the door and the vehicle as it's driving back into him. Not a place you want to be. During the altercation, the officer is able to pull the keys from the vehicle as it hits a tree. And then when the officer went to arrest the occupants, the story just gets better and better. What's the driver do? He pulls out a shotgun from between the seats. Now, it's very hard to catch from the video that's available to us, but the cop sees this guy pull a shotgun out from between the seats. And he leaves the vehicle. He's on the driver's side, and our cop is on the passenger side. So he's having to kind of look through the driver's window and the interior of the car to see what's going on. But the guy throws the shotgun into the bed of the truck. And there were four people inside the vehicle at the time, and they're all facing a variety of charges. The cop ends up asking the driver, "Hey, did you just take something out of the gun and put it in there?" He wasn't even, he saw it, but maybe he didn't want to believe it. Maybe Travis is his brain, you know, doing the brain thing again, you know. Maybe the next day he wakes up in the morning and goes, "Man, now I can see it clearly." The guy takes a shotgun out and puts it in the bed of the truck. But anyhow, there's possession of stolen property. There's small amounts of meth and fentanyl, weapons offenses, all kinds of stuff. And the officer actually suffered minor injuries as well. So commentary on this one, guys. But all right, Jeff Winninger, start us off.
You know, the one thing I just question is the wisdom of tactically walking up on a vehicle that you believe to be stolen. My training, that is a high risk stop where you maintain a position of cover and you methodically and systematically remove people from the vehicle, verbally giving them direction on where you want them to be placed. Place them face down, arms and legs spread. You can wait there as long as you need to until you get additional resources to approach and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, and a lot of people call them felony stops. Listen, it doesn't have to be a felony to be high risk stop. So, you know, officers need to be patient and be calm and put everything in their favor relative to minimizing the bad actor's ability to cause you harm. And that's what really was lacking here. And to be honest, Chip, I mean, you know, we see often videos that are very similar to this that end differently where there's an officer involved shooting because the officer fires as a result of trying to protect themselves from serious bodily injury or death due to the fact that they're hanging on to the side of a moving vehicle. So I was surprised that it didn't end that way. But this whole thing can be avoided with better tactics.
No, yeah, no. As Jeff said, those initial tactics are so important and so vital. And we all have to understand that the closer that we are with suspects, with especially unknown suspects, the more dangerous it gets. Over 50% of all officer involved shootings happen within 5 feet, 75% within 10 feet. So a great decision is always stay past 10 feet away. Don't get in a hurry, right? We all talk about time, but time plus distance is by far the safest approach.
Yeah, tis true. And you know, when you're by yourself, you got a vehicle with four occupants. I mean, there's a lot going on. There's a lot to pay attention to. So I can get why maybe he didn't initially pick up on that shotgun, but boy, that could be a grave mistake too. It could have ended up, like you said, Jeff, it could have ended up so much differently than what it did. So.
You know, and what's key is that the organization has a responsibility here. Just because this didn't end tragically for the officer, it doesn't mean they shouldn't address this shortcoming in regards to the tactics that were deployed. Yep. You need to address these because that's all part of building the proper culture. Things don't have to go badly for you to insert additional training or some counseling or what have you. The reality is when it happens, regardless of what the outcome is, the organization has to address it. Why? Because that is what's necessary to protect the officers. We can't allow them to start to believe that things are okay to do culturally because they're never addressed. It's like, I've done this 100 times and I've never been disciplined, but now that it went bad, now you're talking to me about it. And that's what.
That's a good point. Good point. Anything addition to that, Travis?
No, Jeff is right on target there. You know, we all look at the end result and we see success, but really success is point A to Z. What's going on? Sometimes we just get lucky, right? And the end result's okay. You think of a police pursuit to where it's mayhem and everything's okay and we're all high-fiving at the end, but what happened from A to Z? So excellent point on culture. What Jeff just mentioned is we need to constantly evaluate how we do and how we can improve, not to get people in trouble, but how to improve next time.
Right, right. Good. I totally agree. And Jeff does too. Hey guys, I want to cover this. We haven't had time to cover this yet. It's not a great story. It's a sad story, but I want to cover it. Fox19.com. Police chief's three-year-old killed in a dog attack involving a former canine. So this is Burlington, Colorado, actually. Three-year-old daughter of a police chief in Colorado was killed in a dog attack involving a former canine officer, according to the Burlington Police Department, or canine, I should say. The deputies with the Kit Carson County Sheriff's Office, they're called to respond to reports of a child being attacked by a dog. And when they get there, the deputies found a mom and her daughter, who was unresponsive, in the backyard while the dog was secured in the kennel. And the little girl was taken to the hospital, and she was pronounced dead, unfortunately. Authorities said the dog was taken to the pound and euthanized. Deputies say the dog was a German Shepherd, previously a canine with the Cheyenne County Sheriff's Office. Now, the Sheriff's Office said the dog was taken out of service due to the end of the department's canine program. And according to the deputies, that dog was not trained in bite work. He was donated to the Burlington Police Department, but he was not in service. And the Burlington Police Chief, Nathan Hill, he took care of the dog in his home at the time of the attack. The Burlington Police Department confirmed that Chief Hill's daughter was killed in the dog attack. Police say that the Kit Carson County Sheriff's Office is going to be the ones investigating it, but added that it was a tragic accident, that it was not a criminal matter, and that the attack was under investigation. So, boy, I tell you, it really kind of humanizes police work and then family and all the other things that go on with it, huh, Travis?
Yeah, this is awful. And it kind of spoke to me because I had an incident. I was a commander over a canine unit. We were taking our dog out of service and the handler couldn't keep the dog. It was generally the practice. And so I said, well, you know, my family was looking for a dog. And the idea of having a former police canine dog may sound like a great idea, but those dogs are not your typical pet dogs. And we actually went to his house, took my family, and that dog jumped up and took out my four-year-old at the time, and we were able to get control of it. Of course, that sort of sent a message to me as I don't think this dog's worthy for me. But it was an ER visit.
Really?
Yeah. And listen, at the end of the day, it was our fault. That dog, if you understand German Shepherds, is they have a connection with a certain family and certain handler. Then they see a lot of times they see a lot of outsiders as that outsiders, and so. Yeah, you've got to be very, very careful around these dogs. Now, it doesn't mean there's not one that's a great, loving family pet. There's plenty of those stories, but I saw that firsthand, the danger of that.
Wow, I didn't know that was going to hit that close to home. Wow, that's amazing. Jeff?
Yeah, I had a similar experience where I took on a retired dog. It was a Belgian Malinois, which I would best describe as a German Shepherd on crack. And I had a horse rescue, and I thought it'd be a good idea to have this dog and give it a nice environment to live in, and it could help, be the police of my horse rescue. It was out of control, and it was just a matter of time before something bad happened, and I had to give the dog back.
Really? Crap. All right. Well, I'm glad we had you two guys on the show when we talked about this then. Wow. Another great show. Thank you so much, Dr. Travis Yates, and also Lieutenant Jeff Weninger. And Travis Yates, they get more information about you at travisyates.org, I believe, correct?
Yes, sir. Just go there and it branch off to everything else.
All right. Beautiful. So his book, his seminars, he's a keynote speaker. You guys can engage with him also on thinicebook.com. You guys can go sign up to get the swag bag and everything as well. So make sure you guys do that. I want to mention the Wounded Blue at thewoundedblue.org. Lieutenant Randy Sutton's 501c3, helping cops out in the world of hurt that are suffering from things like PTSD. And they also have that summit coming up. So please check that out. Our sponsors, guys, galls.com, complyttechnologies.com. ArrowPrecisionUSA.com, GunLearn.com, BlueTheGold.com, AmeriCorps.life, and SafeguardRecruiting.com, TubeBells.com, FishOrlandoBass.com. Thanks for the support. We'll see you guys back tomorrow, 12 noon Eastern.